Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Well, I'll be. It turns out that what we said on this show yesterday is spot on, correct, right on the money, accurate, bullseye. Sometimes the simplicity of the reasoning for the, you know, the reasons for the problems and the issues that we have are overwhelming from time to time. I mean, it Fox News, article on Fox News, title of the article, agents reportedly blocked by secret U.S. policy from looking at social media of visa applicants. Now, we mentioned yesterday on here that, of course, we knew that Tashfeen Malik, her social media account was not reviewed prior to allowing her into the United States. And I shared, I didn't know if that was just ineptness on the part of the, you know, of the screening process, meaning maybe they were supposed to and they didn't do it. But I had told a story of how we, when I worked for an organization, ran a nonprofit that served youth in my state. We were directed by the national organization's HR department not to review social media accounts. And of course, I thought this was patently ridiculous because, you know, if you're going to have an organization that represents, you know, that works with young people and that represents a place where kids can be safe and be taught, you know, good character, they can have adult role models that they can emulate and learn from and be trusted. It seemed to me that it would be important for me to be able to see, not to snoop, but prior to hiring someone, if someone has social media posts that contradict the things that you want to teach a young person, you know, if they're out binge drinking and have pictures of themselves drunk on couches and smoking joints and, you know, philandering and all sorts of stuff like that, then call me crazy. I know in this day and age, that's considered old-fashioned and the antithesis of being hip and cool, but that's not what we want to teach our young people. And to me, if we had a way of determining who these people were, who were going to be the good, solid role models, I mean, the kids could find them on social media, the parents could find them on social media, the donors of the organization could find these folks on social media if they knew who these people were. Why shouldn't we look at them? And of course, I was told not to by the HR department because that was some sort of violation of their, I don't know, privacy, I suppose. So we're told now in this article on Fox News that the policy was not to review social media posts by visa applicants. By the way, welcome to today's show. This is The Antidote to Liberalism, and I'm your host, Todd Huff. Questions, comments, want to direct anything my direction, feel free to email me, todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com, or connect with us on Twitter, @CommonSenseGear. Oh, so we've got this deliberate policy that was designed with, I don't know, designed with the primary concern being HR, or being, excuse me, PR, public relations. I mean, this is absolutely, positively absurd to me. We're talking about publicly posted messages, things that they posted. We're not talking about rummaging through someone's email, you know, trying to to hack into some secure server to find out information about these folks. We're talking about looking at their public social media posts. And this is unbelievable. So this John Cohen, who is the former acting undersecretary at the State Department, or excuse me, the Department of Homeland Security, he says this, quote, immigration security law enforcement officials recognized at the time that it was important to more extensively review public social media postings because they offered potential insights into whether somebody was an extremist or potentially connected to a terrorist organization or supporter of the movement, end quote. Well, no kidding. This doesn't mean that they don't have other secure channels. This doesn't mean that they're not able to hide it from us in some other fashion. But we don't deliberately stick our heads in the sand. I mean, we do when Obama's running the country. We do when the left's in charge. Stick our head in the sand deliberately to avoid seeing what's there to be found. This is ridiculous. This is flat out stupid. And it's dangerous. He goes on to say, this was in an interview on ABC's Good Morning America, that this was the policy that was that he and his team wanted to do was basically look at these posts, right? So Tashfeen Malik's social media postings would have been searched and you know reviewed for signs of potential, I don't know, terrorist sympathies, terrorist connections. But that was refused by the higher-ups because, as Mr. Cohen put it, quote, the primary concern was that it would be viewed negatively if it was disclosed publicly, and there were concerns that it would be embarrassing. Well, heaven forbid, we can't have Obama to be embarrassed. We can't have Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson embarrassed. No, no, no. That's beyond anything we could possibly want in this country because we know that their pride, their dignity is much more important than the lives of American citizens. I mean, this is outrageous. This is inexcusable. Dereliction of duty for these folks not to do things that are obviously necessary to protect this country. Looking at social media posts, it doesn't mean that just because they don't have negative posts that that's the final check mark. But if they're on social media praising ISIS or talking about jihad or Sharia law, then those are flags that should be identified. These folks should not be allowed into the United States. Instead, we put our head in the sand. Absolutely, positively inexcusable. Then, of course, I got to add this as well. Senator Chuck Schumer, New York, who I believe is up for re-election in 2016, so he demanded, the article says here, the Fox News article, he demanded that the U.S. immediately initiate a program that would check the social media sites of those admitted on visas. I love this. I do. Of course, what he says is correct. Keep in mind, he's had a 6-year term. I've not heard anything about this. It reminds me of his position on the Iranian nuke deal, which he came out and basically stood in opposition of, one of the few Democrats to do that. And I think it's because he knows that it's going to hurt him in the polls if he did not do that. But nonetheless, I mean, his guy's been in charge. I love how they're outraged, but it's 100% their fault. It's absolutely, positively 100% their fault. And he's outraged. He's absolutely outraged. Again, I mentioned earlier this Iranian deal is another example. Of course, he was outraged by this as well. This was dangerous, but none of the Democrats went along with this, or 41 of them didn't anyway, including my senator, Jihadi Joe Donnelly's theme song. Joe!
The fight to surrender wherever there's trouble. Jihadi Joe is there.
Jihadi Joe,
radiant hero.
Jihadi Joe is there.
But these guys are dangerous.
Jihadi Joe against logic, his enemy, fighting to help Iran. He never gives up, he's always there, fighting for Iran so they nuke by air.
Jihadi Joe,
radiant hero.
Jihadi Joe is there.
Jihadi Joe is the code name for Indiana's liberal, highly covert junior senator. His purpose? To permit bad deals with Iran, a ruthless state sponsor of terrorism, determined to rule the world.
He'll never give up, he'll stay till Iran's won.
Jihadi Joe don't care.
Jihadi Joe,
radiant hero.
Jihadi Joe.
I mean, I'm sure Chuck Schumer's outraged by the Iran deal, too. I'm sure he just is beside himself in just complete and utter rage seeing what we've done by enabling our enemies to have a fast track to a nuclear weapon. I'm sure he is totally outraged by this. So goes the game anyway. And what kind of fools do these jokers think we are? I mean, unfortunately, they win elections, so this nonsense works. But we have real problems here. Absolutely, positively real problems. And I wanted to start off today's show by sharing that we talked about this yesterday. There's the possibility anytime there's a problem in the government that it's A, ineptness on the, on the part of executing policy, but it's also very possible, as was the case here, that the policy itself was dangerous and stupid and incomplete. And that's what we're suffering from. So, anyway, congratulations, Department of Homeland Security. What are you doing? What are you doing to truly protect us? It's like you're doing, all you're concerned about is getting more people in here that may be harmful, that may pose a threat to the United States, and you don't vet, you don't look into the histories, the beliefs of these people, the things that truly indicate if someone is a terrorist are the things that you refuse. No matter how blatantly obvious they are, you refuse to look at them. It's inexcusable and it's dangerous. We'll be back in a minute. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotetoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotetoliberalism.com/newsletter. Attention bow hunters, archers, and bow fishermen. It's time to stand up for your bow by introducing it to the Bow Dagger, an all-in-one bow stand, stabilizer, and cam protector. Bow Dagger is the most innovative stand-up stabilizer available today, and it adds the extra benefit of protecting your bow. It is so simple, you'll wonder why it wasn't invented decades ago. Bow Dagger is revolutionizing archery and bow hunting, and it works great in the field and on the range. And for a limited time, listeners of this show will receive a $10 discount on the Bow Dagger when you use the code ANTIDOTE during checkout. So go to bowdagger.com today, shop, and use the code ANTIDOTE during checkout. Bowdagger.com, coupon code ANTIDOTE, ANTIDOTE. Bow Dagger makes a great Christmas gift too. Check it out today. Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. It is Tuesday. It is December 15th. Here we are, just, 10 days out from Christmas. Again, I've, as a public service to everyone in this audience, but I'm particularly thinking of the men in this audience. If you've not got the Christmas shopping done, it is time. It is time to get out there and get this taken care of, because Christmas is a mere 10 days away. So next Friday is the Christmas holiday. And as I've said before, you may have Christmas plans, family dinners between now and then. So it's possible you may have a Christmas dinner this weekend. So it's Tuesday and you better be on top of it. So great time of year. You know, I mentioned before, we're going to talk a little bit about a few other things as we get closer to the Christmas holiday. But today, today I've got a few other things I want to get into. And saw this article in The Telegraph. Title of the article, 70 Paris Airport Workers Have Security Passes Revoked Over Extremism Fears. Man, I can already hear this. If something like this happens in the United States, I can hear the left and the questions that they'll be asking. The first question is, will this act by, let's say this was, LAX, right? LAX, Los Angeles. LAX comes out and says that we have revoked certain security clearance from some people that we believe have extremist tendencies. I mean, the first question you're going to hear uttered from the left is, will this lead to more Islamic extremism? I mean, we're told if we state the obvious about Islamic extremism, namely that it is Islamic extremism, or that it is these acts are committed in the name of jihad by people that profess to be Muslims, people that say that they are carrying out the teachings of the Quran, we are not supposed to point that out, because if we do that, it could inspire more of this. I mean, this is what we're told about Guantanamo Bay. We're told that Guantanamo Bay acts as a recruiting tool for the terrorists. Of course, my first question is, if Guantanamo Bay was created because we needed a place to put the terrorist extremist, meaning there was not a Guantanamo Bay prior to the first terrorist attacks on the United States, what do we blame the first terrorist attacks on? Did they know that our response was going to be build Guantanamo Bay detention center in Cuba? Is that what, do they have that sort of a foresight? And this article, by the way, says that their security clearance has been revoked. But I don't see anything in here as to whether or not these people were fired. I mean, maybe this should go without saying, but I've read this article. It says nearly 70 red badges were withdrawn after the attacks. This is talking about the Paris attacks. And this is talking about Charles de Gaulle Airport and Orly Airport in France. And it said that there's nearly 70 red badges, which the red badges are just the security clearance badges. They were withdrawn after the attacks, mainly for causes of radicalization. But were their badges just revoked, or were they fired? I mean, it seems to me, if you're worried about someone being radicalized, I mean, I don't know. I would fire someone. To be honest, I'd probably turn them into law enforcement. I don't know about our law enforcement. I mean, that may get me in trouble. I may be the one that racially profiled, like this guy outside of San Bernardino, who was afraid to turn in his neighbors, who turned out to be Tashfeen Malik and drawing a blank on the name of the guy that committed the terrorist attack in San Bernardino. But these two folks were, and others, were seen doing things that were suspicious, questionable. But he didn't report it. You remember this. I think we talked about this briefly. He didn't report it because he was afraid of racially profiling. I mean, think about that. You can literally make the case that political correctness has taken its first, well, I don't want to say first, but it's taken victims. Because now people in the community there's mixed messages. I mean, they've got this see something, say something campaign, right? But they're going to have to identify what something is. I mean, if we see a group of people acting suspiciously and then we find out upon closer inspection that the people committing the suspicious activities are minority groups, or God forbid they are people of some sort of an Arab descent, and they have the name Muhammad or Abdul or something like that, and we believe that they're Muslim. I mean, what are we supposed to do? We saw something, but should we say something in that case? I mean, they're going to have to clarify what they mean here. So I can already see it now. If something like this happens in a United States airport, the first question from the left will be, are we angering the Islamic extremists by targeting the moderate Muslims that we have just misidentified? Does this send the wrong message? Will it be used as a recruiting tool? I mean, after listening to this and thinking, now I don't know if these people have been fired or not. It doesn't say they'd been fired. It doesn't mean that they were not. But they've had their security clearances revoked, 70 of them. I mean, it sounds like a stinking Clinton-run State Department over there. I mean, I'm just waiting to find out where the bathroom servers were for this bunch of folks. Maybe there's a video to blame for this. Then, of course, there's not a video to blame because Hillary says that the video was not what she told the families caused the Benghazi attacks, which, of course, all four families say is a flat-out lie. But since when does that matter when dealing with the left? Regardless, 70 airport workers have had their clearance revoked. Not sure if they've been fired. Absolutely bizarre to me if they were not fired. But nonetheless, France is actually trying to, I mean, from appearances, from a distance, I mean, we've got listeners in France. You know your country much better than I. But from a distance, it looks like the country, not saying they're doing everything exactly right by any stretch of the imagination, but they are trying to prevent this from happening again. The November 13th, terrorist attacks in Paris. They're trying to prevent those from happening again. I want to share this with you briefly as well. I try to read as much as I can in preparation for this show. You never know exactly the direction that things are going to go, no matter how much. I try not to plan out, exactly what we're going to discuss. I just try to stay informed of issues and see the direction that the program takes based upon. I really do believe that, it has to be something that comes from an emotional spot within me, something that I believe, something that is engaging, something that's worth listening to instead of just, reciting information coldly. That's not going to be something you want to listen to. So I try to read a bunch of different things and just stay generally informed. And as things come to me, as I'm communicating and going through things in the news and talking about how this relates to liberalism or conservatism or the American, ideals, the foundation, what have you, the Constitution, the Declaration, things like that, freedom, liberty, the things that are outlined in the Bill of Rights. So I read a variety of different things. So I see this story. This is a story at Yahoo, and it's talking about Iranian citizens that are getting in trouble, that are going to jail actually, for sharing photos on mobile apps. So I start reading this story. I get to the second paragraph, and it starts off with these words: "In a morally conservative country." Now it's talking about Iran. Okay. Now I have to be honest with you. I could not get past this. I couldn't even read the rest of this story because I'm thinking, look, we'll get more into this in just a second, but I'm what I think most people would call a morally conservative individual. So you forgive me for saying that my spidey senses, or whatever you want to call it, began going off because Iran does not share anything in common with what I believe. Actually, Iran is the antithesis of what I believe. And so I looked at my wife and I said, you know, what do you think this means? Would you call Iran a morally conservative country? Because on the one hand, I understand what they're saying. What they're saying is conservatism, conservative in the sense of, you know, favoring, say, women who dress modestly. I'm putting it nicely for Iran because that's not what Iran does. But this, I'm just trying to understand it through the Yahoo writer's lens here, because Iran is not a morally conservative country. But I'm trying to make sense of what they're getting at here, and I think what they're saying is, you know, conservatively, like if I say a woman is conservatively dressed, it would mean modestly dressed. So I suppose that the writer here, who, based upon this sentence, in my estimation, has no clue what he or she is talking about, is equating modest dress with Iran because, hey, that's the only way to do it. You get beaten with clubs, or you get a lot worse potentially if you don't adhere to Sharia law. So that begs the next question: is Sharia law considered conservative? And I think you got to totally scrap this twisted view of things, because first of all, morality is morality. Morality, there's no such thing as conservative morality or liberal morality. Morality is what it is. Now, people may disagree on what it is, and a liberal may think that some things are not to be put into the moral categories, and a conservative, traditionalist, or someone like myself, we might say that in fact might be a moral issue, but everything in the world is not moral. You know, whether I eat chocolate or vanilla ice cream is not a moral decision for me to make. But morality is what it is. Morality comes, and I believe this as a Christian, morality is simply those things that are in the nature of God. What is moral is what is in the nature of God. And the nature of God is what man was created to fulfill. Of course, we've talked about this before, that we didn't play our role correctly. We decided that we knew better, and we do this every day. Even the most devout follower of Christ among us, we make decisions that are not contrary to what God wants. And that's why God sent Jesus, and we can be forgiven and reconciled to him. But morality is based on the character of God. It's not a conservative or liberal ideology. I would contend that conservatism versus progressivism versus, you know, liberalism, we're calling those things the same thing. Liberalism and progressivism is big government solutions, right? I mean, it's always the government knows best. You know, anytime, take for example, gun control. Government telling you that you can't have a gun to protect yourself. That's what the hardcore gun control crowd wants. That is not conservative. That is liberal. I may believe in certain things as an individual. For example, I believe that we should go to church. But I don't believe that the government should enforce that the government has any role in that. You have a decision. You are responsible for you. And you may think that I'm wasting my time, and that is your prerogative. And you can say, hey, I'm not going to church. I'm going to go to the lake, or I'm going to sleep in, or I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And that is your freedom. God and conservatives respect individual freedom. This is how we're created to be. But Iran is not in the sense of conservative, meaning, you know, individual choice and freedom and liberty. That's on the one end of the spectrum. And big government status are at the other end. It's not fascism on one end and communism on the other. They're all big government. Conservatism is the power of the individual. It's not about, you know, we could disagree. Two well-meaning individuals may disagree on details of certain moral issues. I mean, some of them are very clear-cut. Others are a little bit harder to interpret. And well-meaning people can have disagreements on that. But the conservative says, leave those things up to the individual. Unless it's affecting someone else's individual freedoms and individual property. You know, my freedom to swing my arm ends where your nose begins. But if I back away from you, I can swing my arm all day long and do whatever I want in a conservative world, so long as it does not hit you in the face, is basically the point. Iran, the Nazis in Germany, the communists in Russia and China and everywhere else, the big government socialists. I mean, the Nazi Party was the Nazi Socialist Party. So you've got big government at one end and you've got conservative at the other end. You've got individual. I mean, you've got anarchy, which is completely no government, which is not where conservatism and anarchy don't fall on the same spot on the spectrum. But my point is you've got big government on one end, and that's where Iran is. That's where Sharia law is. That's where oppressive communist regime is. That's where socialist governments are. That's where the Nazi Socialist Party resided. That's not where conservatism lies. It's on the other side of the spectrum. So this idea that Iran is morally conservative, I just wanted to point this out because to me this is something that needs to understand conservatism and to be able to, I don't know, change the mindset in this country. We've got to shake some of these assumptions and starting points because this is not at all the right way to look at it. So anyway, I've got to go here, run a little bit long, but we will be back in just a minute, so sit tight. I'm not a full-time podcaster, but I play one on this show. My daytime job is running a small business called Huff Promotional Strategies. We are a graphic design and promotional products company that helps clients with a wide range of projects ranging from logos and websites to promotional products and apparel. We have experience working with well-known brands, small businesses like ours, and everything in between. So if you need help with marketing and promotional products, why not give us a try? Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today for more information, and you'll find a 10% discount code that we will apply to your next order. We work with businesses, churches, schools, civic groups, sports leagues. You get the idea. Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today to learn more and to get your 10% discount code. That's huffpromotional.com/podcast. Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. It is Tuesday. It is December 15th, and it's my little brother's 35th birthday, so happy birthday, buddy. You know, we ran long in the second segment. I know, shocking to those of you that listen to this show on a regular basis, but there's a lot of other things. I wanted to get into a couple of other articles that I have here. I haven't done that. I don't have time for that today. The only thing I just want to point out is this Freddie Gray, the first trial regarding the death of Freddie Gray has gone to jury deliberations. And I don't pretend to know what's going to happen from this. But I do know, I'm pretty confident of the fact that since there are six different individuals that are going to trial, and this, of course, is just the first trial. Since there are six individuals, the likelihood that the left and the Black Lives Matter crowd is going to get the results that they want across the board are just simply not likely. I mean, it's just not. The idea that all six of these individuals, and I mean, I could be wrong on this, but the idea that all six of these folks are going to be convicted of all the charges is just simply not a likely outcome. So the question then becomes, then what? What's going to happen? We've already seen Baltimore put its forces on special alert to be prepared for potential riots and violence as an outcome of the Freddie Gray jury, of their decision. And, you know, the Freddie Gray the family, you know, and the whatever happened with him, putting all those details aside, I mean, how do we get to this point? How do we get to this point to where cities are worried about riots over the outcome of an individual court case? And we were told in 2008 that Obama was really, electing him anyway, would essentially right the wrongs and begin a time of healing and restoration. And it's just not been that whatsoever. This is, I don't want to say the most divisive president in American history, because I don't feel like I'm qualified to make that blanket statement. But I do believe I'm qualified in saying that this is a very, very divisive president. It's the most divisive president that I am aware of. And it's dangerous. I mean, it's not okay to riot about this. You can protest. You can absolutely protest. No one's stopping anyone from doing that. But this cannot turn into a war zone. This cannot turn into a free, you know, a crime spree for folks to see it as a free invitation to loot, to steal, to break things, to damage private property, to engage in other acts of violence, and God forbid that someone gets seriously injured or killed in all this nonsense. And the authorities have to protect this. The authorities' job are to maintain law and order. And they constantly tell us, just like they tell us anytime that United States plans to use force against our enemies overseas, that we got to be careful that we don't upset the other side. Well, the other side is already upset. The job of law enforcement is to protect the lives of all the citizens, protesters, and those on the other side. But they're also, their job is to also protect private property, businesses. Their job is to protect the general safety and welfare of the families that live there. And I don't have the most confidence. In fact, I don't have any confidence really at all that Baltimore is prepared to do, the leaders anyway, are prepared to do what needs to be done. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here. And God forbid that the jury makes a decision based upon concerns of what the citizens might do in response. I mean, that to me is just, we've reached the bottom of the barrel if that's the case. We're talking, you know, mob rule at that point. We can't let that happen. The rule of law must be enforced and maintained. And, you know, if these guys are guilty of the crimes, then they should be convicted. If they are not, beyond a reasonable doubt, they should be acquitted. And if folks decide to riot over that, authorities need to protect it and to protect, you know, protect property and protect citizens from these folks intent on doing the damage. It's not pretty. It's unfortunate. But this is what happens when you have years of divisive talk and justification. This is what happens. It becomes the acceptable thing to do. Reminds me of that video I referred to earlier this week, last week, about the Christians marching through Dearborn, Michigan at the Muslim festival. The cops were blaming those that were marching peaceably, and they would not stop those from throwing bottles at them because they said that the protesters enraged them based on what was written on their signs, what they were wearing on their t-shirts and what have you. Anyway, we've got to get to the point where this sort of argument, this sort of nonsense is stopped in individual communities and in the highest offices in the federal government, including the president of the United States. So, guys, I've got to wrap it up for today. But as always, it's a pleasure to be here. I thank you so much for joining us. And I hope you have a great day. And we will see you tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.